This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The 2-2 Saints go into Kansas City this evening with the 4-0 Kansas City Chiefs, and this one has kind of been billed as the battle of the injured in many respects. And joining us to talk about it is Mike Haas, voice of the New Orleans Saints. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Oh, yeah, it certainly feels that way. When you look at the injury list that comes out for this week, it came out on Thursday, normally on Wednesday, and like the last 2 weeks, the Saints injury list is almost two pages. And last week when it was Atlanta, they had one guy. One! And this week, Kansas City's got a few more. But, you know, it's just what happens is, and what's been tough, and the Saints would say the same thing, is that you can have injuries. It's when it attacks position groups. That's when it's tough. Linebackers, Demario Davis, Pete Werner, offensive line. You know, you can be deep, but it's tough when you get injuries at a particular position. So not having Pete Werner tonight, that'll be you know, difficult. Not having Willie Gay going up against his former team. You know, they're without their starting running back. They're without Rashee Rice. So it will be interesting, to say the least, to kind of how each team adjusts. Because everybody goes through this. Look at the Rams. Look at San Francisco. Yeah. Everybody goes through it. It's how you adjust.
And then we have a couple of players that will play. They're on the activated list, but they got these nagging kind of injuries, right? Like, you know, stuff around the abdominal muscles and, you know, this
yeah,
and Kamara, that.
I mean, ribs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking about that the other night. When you think about, you know, because Taysom, you know, there's the wall, Taysom, go run through the wall. He doesn't really have what I would call typical football injuries. You know, he doesn't have a calf. It's not a hamstring. It's a, you know, punctured lung, a bruised lung, an abdomen injury. I'm like, well, what? I don't even, what are those, right? Alvin's playing through some fractured ribs. So, you know, you're not going to have Taysom tonight. And so that is a, we've seen already that it changes how this kind of offense looks. Especially when you get into third and short situations, so it'll be interesting. If Kansas City, I just hope that the Saints, and I know they won't fall into this trap that they're not a very good 4-0 team. They could easily be 0-4. Yeah, you know what? But they're not, because they have been able to do what the Saints have not been able to do: not play your best football, but figure out a way to win. Figure out what has to be done to win the game. I think you could safely say Kansas City would not have lost that game to Philly, and Kansas City would not have lost that game to Atlanta. They would have found a way, and, you know, the Saints got to find a way tonight. But tonight, that changes the narrative. You're 2-2. You win tonight. Battle it out. Just gut it out. And now you're 3-2. You got Tampa at home, Denver at home. It kind of changes the narrative, because I always, and you and I have talked about this, these first five were always going to be difficult. They were always going to, you know, if you can come out of this 3-2, you know, 4-1 would have been unbelievable. 3-2 to me would be exactly kind of what you want. And 2-3 is not the end of the world, because you got two straight home. But tonight, a victory tonight can really kind of change the narrative a little bit.
For sure. You got Tampa Bay that's got disruption in their practice routines, right? They're coming to New Orleans early because
New Orleans.
I think today, I think what I heard.
Just come up and just practice up here. Yeah.
Yeah, in preparation for Sunday's game. Interesting about the Kansas City offense, 28th in the league, which kind of surprised me when I was starting to look at the stats. And on defense, both of these teams, Kansas number 4, Saints number 5, there's a lot of parity between these two, right?
Right. Their numbers offensively are not astonishing. Like Mahomes has 6 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, 6 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. I think they have 1 rushing touchdown. You know, they've been banged up, so they have not scored a lot of points. But in the end, they have more points than the other team. Defensively, they've been very strong. These two teams are going to be kind of which offense does better against the other defense, because the Saints' defense has been, you know, very tough, and Kansas City's defense, very tough when they have to be. They'll give up some yards, but, you know, when it comes time, the red zone, fourth down, that kind of stuff, they're very difficult. But they have 1 interception as a defense through 4 games. 1. They're minus, I'm not looking at the stats, they're minus 4, I believe, in the turnover differential. And normally, if you look at these situational parts, when you say, look at third down or turnovers or turnover differential, rushing touchdowns, that kind of thing, will tell you how a team is. The Saints are dominating in almost all those categories. But who cares? You're 2-2. Kansas City is not, but yet they're 4-0. Their situational numbers are not good, but they find a way. And then the key tonight, and it's a different kind of running quarterback with Mahomes. He's not less. When he runs, if he runs the football, he's picking up 30. He's not picking up 5. He's not picking up 6. He'll move around in the pocket, buy time, find Kelsey, find somebody. But if he runs, it means he's got nothing but green in front of him. And so the Saints have faced a rushing quarterback, you know, not so much like this, where he is just so creative and really doesn't want to run. He wants to really just stay back there, find time to make the pass. But when he does, I can assure you, he's got a ton of green ahead of him.
Tonight's key on defense, not unlike a lot of other nights, is on the edges, right? Making sure that they contain him and keep him inside.
Right. You got to, with Patrick, you have to kind of just slowly collapse the quarterback, the pocket. You come in from the edges, you can't give him lanes up the middle. You don't have to, in fact, what you don't want to do is come so hard and so fast, maybe on a zone blitz, that you've given him an automatic lane. You want a slow collapse of the pocket. Well, that sounds good on paper, right? That seems like that's really hard to do, a slow collapse of the pocket, right? And so, but, yeah. It's
sounds easy to me.
Lane integrity, and if you're going to come, if you're going to send the blitz, you better come with the intent of not getting this big hit, not, you know, just slowing them down. Slow them down enough that somebody else can get the sack, because typically the first guy doesn't get him. It can be somebody else. So you got to be very smart with him when you're blitzing, because he will step out of it and make the pass.
Biggest challenge for the Saints offense this evening, obviously, establishing that running the football, right?
Run the football. You don't have Taysom, you know. And so, yeah, you're going to have to run the football, especially on first and second down. If you can just be average, you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to be 8 yards a pop, but you've got to be effective on first and second down to put you, if you have to be, in third and short. And keep doing what you've doing, because they've been able to capitalize red zone. They don't get down to the red zone kick field goals. They get down to the red zone and kick touchdowns. And that's been huge. And that has been huge. Kansas City's fallen behind every game they've played so far. The Saints, and they won't do this. They will not do this. They will not win the toss, the Saints, and take the football. They will defer. I'm not a fan of it, but it is what it is. I would say get on that football field with your best 15 plays, take it down there, and get that lead. because that's what you've been doing, and that's what they've been doing. They've been falling behind. They fell behind to the Chargers 10-0. Against the Chargers, they went interception, they went fumble, interception, punt, touchdown, missed field goal, and won the football game.
I was just going to ask about special teams play, but they've been a little erratic.
Yeah, they have Butker. He's missed one. I think they're very similar. I think he and Groupie, Groupie has missed the extra point. Butker's missed one field goal. Now, the field goal Butker missed was from 65, right? Now, normally we wouldn't even count that. But now you go, 65, you got to make that. Both have missed an extra point. I think, you know, the way things are looking right now, special teams-wise, teams are not returning it, right? They're kicking it out of the end zone, taking their chances at the 30, and I wouldn't be surprised. I'm standing right now in, I don't know where I am, but I'm downtown Kansas City. It is a beautiful, crystal clear day. It's not windy. It's supposed to be in the 50s tonight. Just gorgeous. So I don't think weather will play, wind will play any kind of factor in the game. People are wondering, of course, what the hell I'm doing out on the street talking on the phone like I am, but it is what it is.
Getting ready to walk into a restaurant for lunch, I'm certain, right?
here's the strangest thing. My sister lives in South Carolina, and so she called me, and I go, I got to go to Kansas City. She goes, wait, I'm going to Kansas City. I go, well, the game is Monday. She goes, well, I'm going on Monday. So out of nowhere, I have met my sister for lunch right now in Kansas City. So it's a good day.
Well, we are going to let you get to your sister. That's a lot more important. We will wait and see. We look forward to hearing you guys tonight. I think this is going to be a big game. I think you're right. I think it could be a defining moment of the season, right, and setting you know, creating some momentum. We've got this Tampa Bay kind of phenomenon going on. That helps, I think. You know, it's not easy to regroup, recalculate everything that you're doing in advance of a game, and then Denver comes in. I mean, we got some big time football headed our way.
And here's the deal. In closing, we're never that team, right? We are the team that had to go to Dallas early because the storm was coming to us. But then for Atlanta, we were waiting to see what the situation was in Atlanta. Tampa's coming to us. We've never been in this situation where there's a storm and we're not involved. We're just a helper. So it's weird. And my prayers go out to everybody, you know, on Florida's coast. I mean, these things are horrible. My sister, again, from South Carolina, she goes, you don't understand. Boone, North Carolina, all those places, they're devastated, right? Yeah. And so they can't, you know, it's just, it's different to watch it from other places.
And I don't know if you heard, but Milton's a Cat 5 now.
Yeah.
Which is scary.
I mean, I hope that thing just somehow zips across Florida as fast as possible. And, man, I don't know. It's just, it is, God, this October. Stop.
Yeah. Stop already. Yeah, exactly. We want to move on. Thank you so much, Mike Haas. Look forward to listening to you guys this evening, as always. Mike Haas, voice of the New Orleans Saints. Tell your sister hello.
I will. Thank you, Noah. I appreciate it.
All righty. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. While we were discussing what was going on through four or five different states on the East Coast relative to Hurricane Helene, I got a text message from retired Colonel Bill Doran. He is a retired FEMA federal coordinator and also a member, former member of the National Guard. And he made the observation that he thought it was an interesting conversation and talked about expectations and what realities are relative to FEMA. So I texted him back and asked him if he would be willing to come on, and he said he would, and he joins us now. Colonel, welcome to the show.
Hey, good afternoon, Newell. Kind of driving right now, so got my hands free.
Well, we certainly appreciate it. I talked about how FEMA really in many respects is an agency that is probably every bit as part-time as it is full-time. Your thoughts about some of my observations?
Yeah, sure. We have FEMA regions, and you have a headquarters in Washington, which are full-time folks. Mostly do planning, training, exercising, preparedness-type activities. But once FEMA gets called out, we rely on a lot of reservists. And that's people that are maybe retired or just work sporadically for us that come out. And probably 80% of those folks are dealing with the infrastructure that gets damaged for local governments as opposed, and then also working with individual households that wind up getting damaged.
So when we talk about the expectations, you know, I mean, I think a lot of folks, they get frustrated because they think of FEMA in a different context than the actual reality of the construct of the organization. Would you agree?
Yeah, FEMA is a support organization. They come in to support the state once a declaration has been declared. But the folks out there doing the search and rescue and that sort of thing, other than bringing in a FEMA USAR team, are your local first responders, police, fire, medical folks, that sort of thing. So, you know, when FEMA comes in, it's more like one of my colleagues used to say, we rappel in out of a helicopter with a checkbook as opposed to be responders, and we're there to support the state in their response.
So one of my lessons learned in the aftermath of Katrina, and I used to speak publicly about this all the time, is that I recognize that if you don't control it, it ain't going to happen. And you got to be able to stand yourself up, have 7 to 10 DOS days of supply that you can count on. Because if you're counting on others, you never know what challenges they're facing. You never know what their capabilities may be, and you need to take control of the things that you can take control. Your thoughts?
Yeah, competing resources becomes a big deal because you may have gotten hit, say, in Jefferson Parish, and Orleans got hit worse. And, oh, by the way, FEMA's, the media's concentrated on Orleans Parish. Well, that's where FEMA's putting all their capabilities. So the better off you're prepared, say, in Jefferson Parish like you guys were, the more you'd be able to sustain yourselves. The longer, I guess, when you request the federal government to assist, the longer it takes and the more expensive it is. You're better off being prepared locally. Having pre-disaster contracts is a good thing to have as well, identifying your gaps and knowing what those might be so you can flip the switch once you get hit by a catastrophic event.
When you see, like, this path of Helene, where Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, you know, you got five states that are hit. When you think about the a FEMA response to that, it would seem to me that would be pretty taxing on the operational infrastructure of that organization.
Possibly. What normally happens, Newell, is that you'll get additional folks from the other regions to support. Each region has usually a couple of incident management assistance teams, and then there's some federal national teams that will come out. That'll get things started. So four or five states may be overwhelming for one region, like Region 4, which all of those states happen to be in. But they can reach out to the other FEMA regions for assistance and some of the areas that haven't been hit by anything recently, whether it be from the Midwest or FEMA Region 6, where I worked out of Denton, Texas. And they'll supply some capabilities as well.
You know, it's in, and then you have this Hurricane Milton, which is now a Cat 5, going to hit the part of that same region here probably Wednesday afternoon, Thursday morning maybe. I got to imagine that's just another curveball, right?
Yeah, and it's aiming at a place that's heavily populated, which is always a challenge. If Tampa Bay gets hit, that's the equivalency of saying New Orleans getting hit. Doesn't have the bowl situation, but the storm surge to some place like that could be devastating.
Is there value in your thoughts with your experience inside of FEMA? That it be a more robust organization. And I think of this in context of, you know, we have a lot of discussions down here about flood policies, right? And I've been an advocate of an all-hazards national policy, and that the only way that we're going to be able to afford a lot of what's going on is that we need to have more participants in these programs. And I have kind of the same feeling about FEMA, because I think FEMA's called upon a lot with a lot of different natural disasters that sometimes they weren't in all of it, but they seem to be in the middle of everything now. Your thoughts?
Yeah. You know, when I worked with the National Guard in Louisiana, I was there for Katrina and filled the role as the operations chief at the state EOC during that time, and worked with a lot of FEMA folks. One of the big problems that has always been a challenge with FEMA is falling now under DHS, where FEMA used to be more of a direct report to the president back when Clinton was in. I think James Lee Witt was the director then. Not long after President Bush took office, it was no longer a direct report to the president, and then eventually fell under, after 9/11, under Department of Homeland Security, and somewhat got buried in that bureaucracy. And I think that if you look at FEMA now, there's probably some reorganization that could take place, depending upon, you know, what administration is there, and it could definitely be more efficient in a lot of areas. And having lived in Louisiana for most of my life, born and raised there, I know the situations you guys are dealing with flood insurance. The folks in North Carolina are going to deal with that, because a lot of them probably didn't have flood insurance.
I would think the vast majority don't, right?
Right. And so insurance is the first tier of what FEMA looks at. So you may have had a $300,000 home that got totally washed away, and you're going to get $36,000 from FEMA. So it's not really going to cover anything that you lost. So the only thing it's going to allow you to do is maybe get a low-interest SBA loan, and most people don't want to add that to, if they've got a mortgage, don't want to do that. So most of them will just sell or give up. You know, there's so many things have to deal with the flood insurance stuff, and I agree with you. There needs to be a national policy on that, because otherwise it's never going to get fixed.
I don't know if you want to comment on this, but I mean, I know, and I agree with you. I think FEMA was much better situated when they were direct reporting to the executive branch of government, as opposed to being, you know, caught up in the DHS, because they can reprogram dollars and they can shift responsibilities, and they have. In fact, the FEMA has played a role in the southern, you know, border situation and crisis down there, and processing payments for hotels and things of that nature, and sustenance and food and this and that. And I was saying in my commentary that I thought that's not a good practice, you know, that we predominantly were dealing with emergencies as a result of natural disasters. in regions, and now we're moving to something else. And it seems to me that it's not the most robust organization from an operational perspective, and you just make it even less so when you're giving it all these other responsibilities. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree there. One of the things that wound up getting FEMA involved originally in the board was trying to get other federal agencies to work together, and that's what FEMA does well, is getting the other federal agencies to work under one umbrella and communicate. As you remember, earlier in the border situation, Border Patrol was not working with HHS well on transitioning unaccompanied minors and that sort of thing. And FEMA wound up getting involved in that. But I think taking those resources that are normally for disasters and using them for another purpose is probably short-sighted and probably belong to another agency as opposed to FEMA.
Yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, for me, my expectation would be that you're focused on that one silo, right? Because it's so critically important in pulling all of that together. Just one final thought. One of the frustrations that we had was you guys, as you pointed out, in the midst of a storm, you're handling a bunch of contracts. I know that we had folks from the Forestry Service. We had, you know, who were phenomenal people. I mean, all of these people were phenomenal people. But they had like these 2-week, 3-week, 4-week, maybe some of them 6-week contracts, and then they would roll out. And in the aftermath of the storm, you would end up dealing with 3, 4, 5, 6 different folks, and there wasn't a lot of strong continuity. And it was, you know, each individual brought a different perspective to the situation, and it made it really difficult and frustrating for us in dealing with that. I'm sure you've heard complaints of that. Your thoughts about that situation?
Yeah, I've seen that many times, Newell. What winds up, especially on the public assistance side, folks will deploy in from somewhere else. They want to go home after 30 days. They want to go home after 60 days. And you have a lack of continuity, maybe not a good handoff, somebody asking you for the same information 3 or 4 times because someone didn't hand it off. Right. Especially in the reimbursement arena, which we deal in. And I was more on the response side, but I've dealt with that enough to know. And then when you're talking about like forestry and things like that, in most cases, these folks are volunteering, or they're coming in via. They may have come in via EMAC, where they were from another state, and the state's paying for that. And it may have been, hey, they only agreed to come 30. Well, we'll take what we can get, bring them in, and then we'll get somebody else to backfill them. And you're going to have that. And it's a matter of how well the organization gets its arms around operating in the field. Using the incident command system that law enforcement and firefighters use to deal with incidents and make sure everybody's on the same sheet of music. So it becomes a challenge. And in my role as the FCO, that was our role, was to try to organize chaos out of all these cats and dogs coming in and get them all working in the same direction with the same priorities.
And I get the sense that there's so many similarities between what's happened with Helene and Katrina because of the level of infrastructure damage, you know, the roadways and things of that nature, maybe even more so in North Carolina because people are isolated. At least we had alternative routes that we could take, albeit not very convenient, but still it was available. And you have large swaths of areas, thankfully not heavily populated, but people that are completely isolated. They can't get, you know, to anywhere from where they are because of the infrastructure impairment. It's going to be interesting to see as this plays itself out. You don't see that challenge that often, right?
Yeah. As you well know, because we both dealt with Katrina when I was with the National Guard, logistics was the biggest hinge pin there of trying to get things in to the New Orleans and Jefferson Parish areas, the devastated areas, and having your interstate blocked, And then how are you going to dewater New Orleans? You're post-evacuating 60,000 people that stayed behind because they can't sustain there. So lots of challenges with that one, and there's going to be lots of challenges with this one. And it takes the combined minds of the folks at the state and local level, as well as FEMA assisting them, to figure out how to do it. And in a place like Western North Carolina, this is almost like a no-notice event. Even though you know you had a hurricane coming in, you were going to get water. Nobody could imagine that much water coming in and that much washed out infrastructure. So it's, I guarantee you, no one has planned for something like that. They may have for, say, the Cascadia earthquake that would cut off, like, the west coast of Washington and Oregon from the rest of the country. So some people have thought about that and planning, but nothing in that North Carolina area.
Yeah, and again, our thoughts and prayers go out to them. And I know you've probably worked so many of these storms that you can't than you care to talk about. It's just one tragedy after the next, right?
Yeah, and I'm working as a consultant now, and for one of the companies that picks up debris, and you know, just the logistical challenge, just for getting those trucks in there and those kind of things becomes a challenge.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for texting in and then willing to join us. You know, I had a lot of folks that they texted in that were kind of, they didn't believe what I was saying about FEMA, that it's really more of a part-time agency. And it's like, folks, it's not what you think it is. And I mean, that's, I don't mean that as a criticism. It's not their fault. But we've not really stood an agency up like that to really come in all hands on deck in such with the immediacy that I think a lot of folks expect. And so we really thank you for joining us to clear that up. Thank you so much, sir. Thank retired you. Colonel Bill Doran, FEMA retired FEMA federal coordinator and member of the Louisiana National Guard. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870. We'd love to hear from you about your thoughts about this conversation we just had. Stay with us. Give us a shout, folks, on the Oakwood Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. Big game tonight. I don't know about you. I'm very excited about it. We'll be watching on Monday Night Football. And tune in to WWL 870 AM 105.3 FM. And you get to hear Mike and Deuce and their commentary on their game, play-by-play by those folks. And we truly appreciate all of what they do. We'd love to hear from you about your comment, your thoughts about what we were talking about relative to FEMA. And again, as I said before, this is not a criticism. It's just sometimes the reality doesn't match up with, you know, our expectations and what our thoughts are about particular federal organizations and how they go about doing what they do. The onus really is on local and state government. And as I said before, if you don't control it, it ain't going to happen. And the horror stories that flow from there are huge. And you begin to learn lessons really, really quick. Right. And we talked some about that with the continuity issue of folks that come in on these limited period of time contracts, and they're handing off, and there's expectations that certain things were done by the previous individual that weren't. You're having to provide the same information over and over and over again. It's ridiculous. I can tell you, in the aftermath of Katrina, 5 years post-Katrina, my CFO, Paul Rivera, at the time was still submitting reports over and over and over again. Frustrating, would come in and say, you know, we can't close this out because they're still asking for the same data that I've provided on five or six occasions already. And it was really frustrating. I think we went, it may have been 8 or 9 years post-event where we still had matters that were open with FEMA. And that just kind of gives you a flavor of how this works out with the reimbursement. You had a number of local entities that were down and out. They didn't have the money internally. It's one of the huge arguments that I'd have with any number of folks that looked at the health, financial health of the JPSO at the time. A lot of the dollars that we had in fund balance, we had long time ago figured that what we needed to make it through the year on a cash basis and what we needed to have in reserve in order to accommodate the organization financially if we were challenged by a natural disaster, by a hurricane or flooding or whatever that may be. Because if you wait till the last moment to go and do things, it doesn't happen. And you don't have the money to pay your folks. You don't have the money to buy certain things to make sure that you're able to continue your operations in a good, healthy, aggressive way each and every day. You're not able to provide overtime and make that payment. You don't have the working capital needed internally, and they do not front you money. So in those areas that are really prone to these type of events, you as the taxpayer should demand that those agencies have healthy fund balances so that they're able to continue to provide the service that you need as a taxpayer. And, you know, there are accepted standards that are put out by Government Finance Officers Association and others. And that is, you know, the most conservative approach, maybe to have somewhere between 3 and 6 months worth of operating expenses, held in abeyance, so to speak, to be able to make it through the year on a cash basis without having to borrow money to make payroll and things of that nature. All very dangerous things to do, especially in government when you have responsibilities that most other businesses don't have. You're going to begin to hear these same stories, a repeat of local government experience in Katrina, of what's happening in both South Carolina, North Carolina, East Tennessee, Georgia, and Florida. And now Florida getting potentially the double whammy. And it's going to get worse. One thing I'll say about Ron DeSantis, he doesn't wait to make a decision. He's on top of it, and you know, because I think he knows better than most. And you'll learn. You know, I can tell you, I can promise you, Louisiana governors know better than most of how this works and what it ultimately requires. So it's going to be interesting to see. And we will continue to hear these stories about this. And again, it's not a criticism. We are responsible for setting this system up. If we want it to change, we have to reach out to our congressional leaders and change it. I've heard a lot of this back and forth about what we've been willing to do, and I've participated in it, you know, for the illegal aliens coming to this town and coming to this country, and how quick we've responded in providing the sustenance for those individuals. You just heard what Mr. Doran said. If you're uninsured for flood and you lose your home, the most that you're going to get from the federal government is $36,000. We have individuals that have been put up in hotels for 3 to 6 months that got more than the $36,000, which is the most that you're going to get if you're uninsured under the present FEMA guidelines today. Want to talk about equity? I want that citizen privilege, and so should you. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Scoot joins us. Welcome back, Scoot. So glad you're back. What do we have coming up?
Yeah, it's going to be great to be back. I'm so excited to be able to talk about football. It's game day, Manic Monday, but it's game day. So, you know, we've got an abbreviated show because of our early coverage of the pregame beginning at 3 o'clock. So we'll talk a lot about the Saints. We'll talk about some of the crazy high school and college football that took place over the weekend. We'll talk a little bit about politics, but we're not going to get too much into that this afternoon. More on that later in the week. But, hey, it's game day. Monday Night Football, Saints Chiefs tonight. Taylor Swift will be in the stands.
And you sound focused to me, so we're ready for the game tonight.
I'm ready.
All right. Scoot's up next. Stay tuned.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.